Welcome to Serotalk Tech Chat 22. This is Michael Loff, and it is June 25, 2009. Tonight, this is the first of what I'm sure will be a few ongoing tech chats on the subject of the new iPhone 3GS. Now, this particular one, we're not going to get into specifics of how do I do this, how do I do that, although we are looking to do a presentation like that. So if you own an iPhone 3GS and would like to share your experiences with new owners and talk about some of the things you have found, please contact me, resources@serotalk.com, so that we can put together a panel for that. What we are doing tonight, we've assembled a panel of five individuals. From Serotech Corporation, we have Mr. Mike Calvo, the CEO. We have Ricky Anger.
Hello.
Yes, Ricky Anger.
Hello.
The one and only. Yours truly, Michael Loff. And also joining us is Jeffrey Stark from Canada and Bill Bullis, who oversees purchases and training in the state of Alabama. So we thank all of you for joining us tonight. What we're doing is a little different for them. It is a panel, if you will, where what we've done is assembled eight questions. Each question will be read by yours truly, and then each person will have 1 minute, up to 1 minute, to comment on the question. You don't have to comment on it if you don't feel you have anything to contribute or feel that people who have spoken before you have addressed the issue. We will use a specific order. Out of courtesy, we will have ladies first, so Ricky Anger will be the first to respond, then followed by Bill Bullis, Jeffrey Stark, yours truly, Michael Loff, and then we'll let Mike Calvo close, giving him the opportunity to address anything that may have come up in the previous four comments. So with that said, we shall begin. We have here Mr. Tommy Time, and you won't hear it, hopefully, throughout the presentation, but once I ask the question, we will start it, and we will do our best to keep people at 1 minute increments to keep the flow of this going. With that said, let's start the first question. Do you feel that there are certain products and services that blind and partially sighted individuals should not have replaced by mainstream companies? Ricky, your comments.
I think there are some, and these are perhaps a bit obvious. I think that mobility training, training with a dog, those types of things should definitely remain as they are in a sort of blindness-specific type training scenario. I also think that independent living skills training, whether it's cooking, cleaning, that sort of thing, I think that services should be made available where somebody who is either blind or has worked with blind people for quite some time can sort of help the newly blinded individual or the person who doesn't know a lot about those skills to overcome the sort of common hurdles that might be faced by a blind person first learning to do those types of things. But other than that, I can't think of anything that I would prefer to be blindness specific.
Honestly, I feel that a lot of these, you know, mainstream companies are going to follow Apple's lead, you know, and I don't think that there's going to be a whole lot like falling by the wayside. I honestly think that they're finally taking into consideration the fact that there are statistics out there of 50 million or so blind and low vision users. Baby boomers are starting to lose their vision more and more. You know, they're going to have to cater. I mean, a huge part of their revenue is going to come from people like us, you know. So I really do. I think they're gonna be followed. Apple is by other companies. I could see, you know, Motorola maybe coming out with some stuff. I could see Nokia, who actually tried to come out with a TTS and stuff like that. You know, I could definitely see that happen.
My feeling is that most things can be handled by the quote unquote mainstream companies. There are certainly some things we should be concerned about. One of which, what are their motives? If it's truly altruistic reasons and they're using resources and revenues they get from other projects, that's great. However, we should be concerned if they're solely doing it for profit and then flooding the market with products and then finding that when those products no longer offer revenue, that they just leave them by the roadside. Although one could argue the same thing happens with existing AT companies. So we have to hope that this would spur innovation. But it certainly is something that has to be thought about carefully. If you have Apple and one or two other companies, and all of a sudden the industry has radically changed, whereas there are people now who work for the passion of offering these products and services, and that could conceivably be lost if other companies get into the fray and are not as attentive to great detail as is Apple. Mike Cavill, your comments.
You know, I'm fond of telling the story. I was raised in Miami. I'm of Cuban descent, and my parents came here in the 60s. And when they came to Miami, all there were basically American folks. And what they did is they built a community. They were given a certain area of town. They built a community. And one of the immigrants would open up a coffee shop. Another one would open up a gas station. Another one would open up a dry cleaner, what have you. And one day, Joe American came in and realized that these Cuban folks were actually spending green American money, or whatever your nationality's money is, if you apply this analogy to it. So what they did was they took the little, what we would call a farmacia or a bodega, and they replaced it with a Walmart. And what they did was they hired some people from the community who spoke the language, who understood the cultural needs of the community to work within this store that had replaced the, if you will, the community store, or the ghetto store, if you will, at that time, and replaced it with a mainstream store. And I really think that that's where this community is poised right now. I think that great work has been done by organizations like Freedom Scientific and GW Micro and others that have really lobbied organizations like Adobe Systems and Microsoft and IBM, and have really heard the voice of us as blind consumers and said, you guys need to build standards. And these companies have done that. I think those standards have been well documented. I think that the internet has given us as consumers an opportunity to let our voices be heard by these product and service providers. So I would have to be opposed to really keeping things inside the community only. I think that services, sure, we need blind people teaching, we need blind people programming, we need blind people in every aspect that they think they can accomplish. But as far as keeping it only in the community, kind of a FUBU, for us, by us, no, I'm kind of opposed to that. I think it's time for, you know.
Okay, very good. Question number two. What impact, if any, do you think the iPhone will have on manufacturers of hardware and software? In particular, companies like Code Factory or Nuance Talks, companies who make note takers like Levelstar, Freedom Scientific, and Humanware, or general Windows screen reading companies. What impact do you think the iPhone can have on these industries? Start with you, Ricky.
I think the impact is going to be something of a philosophical one. It has sort of bigger picture implications. I mean, yes, Code Factory and Talks have probably lost a few customers, like me, for example, who would have bought a Symbian license rather than, but now I've got the iPhone. But the bigger picture is that people are really going to start questioning, do I really want to shell out this money in addition to having just paid for this expensive phone or this expensive computer? Or do I want to look at a solution that has this built in as the iPhone does? And I think, again, people are going to think twice before they spend their money, and a lot of them are going to decide not to go with the screen reader, be it a Windows screen reader, or on the mobile side, a mobile screen reader. They're going to decide maybe not to do that and just get the integrated solution.
Okay. Again, very good. 62 seconds. William Bullis, your comments.
Yeah, well, when you talk to these AT companies, which I do pretty much every day, you know, you talk to some of these people up there that are high level enough to make decisions, the image that they put out there is that they're not really intimidated. You know, the iPhone is an iPhone. There's going to be fans of Apple that buy it. They're not intimidated. But, you know, going back to what I said earlier, when more companies start to integrate accessibility into other products, you're going to see a loss for these big AT companies. And you know, they're not big companies. They're in the big scheme of things, they're small companies. In blindness, they're huge. But you'll see, they're going to feel it. They're definitely going to feel it. You know, already as a state employee who places a lot of orders for their type of stuff, you know, there has been a drop in note takers and things like that, and there has been a big move to smaller devices. Not necessarily Apple. We're not doing iPhones yet. However, you know, replace the iPhone with anything else, like a netbook or something like that, and there it is.
Okay, very good. Jeffrey Stark.
I think that there is always room for innovation, and I think a company that stagnates is going to be left behind. The iPhone coming into the market just demonstrates that it can be done by the mainstream when enough voices are heard. And I think people will move towards expecting these things in future integrated into systems. As in, once you've seen that it can be done on an iPhone, once you've seen that, oh, I'm buying, just like everybody else, an off-the-shelf device, I think the next generation will come to expect that. And I think that can only be a good thing. Will that push out the industry? No. I think it will mean that the industry will have to innovate.
Okay. Very good. At 44 seconds and thoughts from Michael Loff on this. As far as the impact, that certainly is going to depend on how many people embrace the iPhone. I don't think the iPhone alone is going to radically alter. However, it is the beginning, and it is going to require innovation, and people are going to think twice about spending additional money when they can have a screen reading technology included into their phones. And best of all, competition is always a good thing. It means that they're going to have to re-examine the prices of their technologies. So hopefully as some GPS solutions become available and OCR technologies become available, that companies will have to realize, hey, we have no choice but to lower our prices. And that's ultimately what we want. We want to pay what everyone else is. And that is what is so significant for those who maybe haven't seen that yet about the iPhone. However, the downside of the iPhone that people aren't thinking about is the fact that, yeah, you get this device for $199 or $299, but you're committing over $2,000 over the next 2 years to pay for the services to make the phone work. And so all of that has to come into play. Mike Calvo, your comments, sir.
I think that universal design principles are extremely important. And as mainstream companies begin to adhere to them, I think that they're going to learn, as Apple has learned, that there is a ready, willing, and able group of consumers ready to purchase these products. And once the mainstream starts understanding these features, remember, folks, that what you and I consider to be a need, for example, for our phone to talk or whatever, our needs are the luxuries that the mainstream uses. I mean, remember, we've had talking books since 1937 or 34 or something like that. And all of a sudden in 1980, the mainstream said, hey, we've got something called books on tape, after we've been agitating for change in that market for years and years and years. So I think it's just natural evolution. And I think that any AT company that doesn't follow the mainstream closely and try and get as close to it in price points, in feature set, they're going to die on the vine. And I think that that's been proven as other dinosaurs in the AT industry have gone.
Okay, very good. Question number three is, are any of you concerned that mainstreaming of access technology products might actually result in stifling innovation? Ricky?
Not at all. I think that stifling innovation really comes about because of complacency, and I don't think that the mainstream is more or less susceptible to that than anybody else. I think that any company, be they an AT company or a mainstream company, if they're allowed to become complacent, if their market doesn't stand up and shout about what they want, then certainly they aren't going to have the need to innovate. But if we as consumers advocate for what it is that we want, whether a mainstream company tries accessibility and gets it wrong the first time, or even if an AT company tries to do something and gets it wrong the first time, and that has certainly happened, we have to be the ones to make it known what we expect of these companies. So we need to be pushing innovation, and if companies don't step up to the plate, they go away.
Well, you are so awesome. 1 minute on the dot. I can't help but notice that. William Mullis.
This is trippy.
You're good. William.
Obviously, mainstreaming brings forth competition. You know, these AT companies are going to see what the mainstream manufacturers are doing, and it's going to make them better, I think. If it doesn't, they fall to the side. That's basically it. I'm not going to use a product necessarily based on who makes it. I'm going to use it when it works for me. And if a mainstream company makes something that works for me, it's in my hands, it's in my pocket, it's on my desk. If you know, the AT companies, unfortunately, are just going to have to learn that lesson or go away. And I think they will. I think competition brings forth innovation. And, you know, that's basically it.
Okay. Jeffrey Stark, your comment, sir.
It's probably echoing a lot of the same things that have already been said, but at the same point, if you have a need, I don't care if it comes from an AT company or a mainstream company, if that need exists, if the market exists, someone will come to respond to it. If the industry doesn't respond to it, then the AT vendors have their opportunities. But in my view, it's always best to integrate these things first. What I would say is that as far as our current generation of AT vendors, I think we're going to end up seeing a new generation. And what AT is will change dramatically as accessibility features get integrated into devices.
Okay, very good. Thoughts from Michael Loff are that I'm concerned about it, but no more or no less than any other industry. We are in a supply and demand driven economy. And I think the biggest enhancement, as has already been said, is that some of the existing access technology companies will have no choice but to innovate and look what competitors are doing or change their products and services and get into some new arenas. So I don't really have too much to add to it. It's I think we will be much better off. Now, one could argue, what if all AT came through Apple and Microsoft and we got lost in the corporate shuffle? But I really can't see any way that using products that are sold to a larger number of people does not benefit all of us, and we can tag along for the ride and innovate along with everyone else, just as the amazing things that those of us have been able to do with the iPhone in just the last few days. Mike Calvo.
I actually believe that the current state of the industry is stifling innovation as it is. If you look at the majority of the companies in the AT industry, especially when it comes to blindness, they're owned by bankers. My honest question is, what the hell does a banker know about AT? They want to keep it as a status quo. It makes their bottom line continue. Unfortunately, many of them deal with government agencies, so it's falsely holding up a monopoly that's not based on innovation. It's based on what we've been doing for the last 20 years. This is 2009. I celebrate my 20th year in adaptive technology. And let me tell you, I'd much rather see 10 mainstream companies not do it right than one AT company knowing that they might be able to do it right because they have the financial resources. But why should we? We have the market cornered. We have the government in our pocket saying we're going to buy this instead of anything else. So really, I mean, we need this. And as far as Microsoft or Apple, I doubt it. I deal with Microsoft, I deal with Apple, and they both have tools that anyone can use to develop their own tool, their own products and services. I don't think that Microsoft or Apple are in the AT business. They're in the enabling business so that product and service providers can make new and innovative products and services.
Okay, very good. Question number four. Could a smartphone adequately replace one of the currently popular note-taking devices, be that a PacMate, Icon, Braille Note? Ricky?
Not quite yet. And I think it has to do with, if you look at the keyword note-taker, if you're taking notes, you really don't want to be writing War and Peace on either a keypad or a touchscreen or even a tiny little QWERTY keyboard. I think a netbook makes a much better replacement for a note taker. But having said that, much of the functionality is readily available on the smartphone. If you want something to read your email, to listen to your podcast, to read web pages, surf the web, that kind of thing, yes, a smartphone is absolutely adequate for that. But it's the taking of the notes that it sort of falls short.
Okay, William, your thoughts, sir.
I gotta agree with Ricky. I don't feel that they've fully figured out the whole PDA thing with smartphones and things like that. They haven't done it. A good solution for some people would be one of the little foldable Bluetooth keyboards with the device. That works, then it doesn't work. There's a little lag period. It's not a comfortable, for me anyway, it's not a comfortable use. However, if somebody came up with maybe like a little docking station where the PDA would sit on top and you have a QWERTY keyboard, game on at that point. And I think if Apple comes out with something like that where you can rest your little iPhone on it, they're going to hit one out of the park, you know, and it's stuff like that. It's design. I mean, obviously they're not designed to work for blind people, but if you tool it the right way, if somebody comes up with something innovative where it could work, goodbye PacMate, goodbye Braille Note, goodbye whatever. You know what I mean? It's just not going to, no one's going to pay $6,000 for something that they can get for, you know, $350. You know what I mean? So that's
very good point. Jeffrey.
I'm actually in the opposite end of that camp. I had the choice of picking up a note taker or a smartphone, and I picked up a Symbian smartphone, and I use it on a day-to-day basis for every function that would normally be used as on a note taker. Even more so, I've got colleagues who are doing exactly the same thing. They went with E-series Nokia phones with talks. And in addition to that, when you add something like a Bluetooth keyboard, or I like the SU8W, it's a seamless experience. You add a Bluetooth Braille display with Braille input and output, like the Braille Connect 12 or 18, and your average Braille user has got the equivalent of a note taker right there. You can edit documents, you can read material, you can send emails, you can do calendaring and contacts and notes. So in my view, there's very little left that a note taker would accomplish that combination wouldn't.
Okay, very good. Thoughts from yours truly, Michael Loff, are that in their current incarnations, smartphone is not quite there. Not that it doesn't have the processing power capabilities, it's design, it's the ergonomics of it. And that's the age-old challenge that companies are trying to design something that's small enough to fit in your pocket or purse, but yet give you all of the functionality that you need. But to me, this is the logic I can see for Apple and other companies looking at blind and partially sighted individuals. Even if it's a business model, what a great test market. I believe it was Kodak who realized if we can design a camera that blind people can use and take pictures, then we have made it so that almost, I would hope they wouldn't think everyone, but hopefully almost anyone could use it at that point because we've overcome the hurdles. So I think there's a lot to be said there. I certainly hope they evolve to that point because paying $200 versus $6,000 is something we should all be striving for so that states can take the limited money they have and serve a larger number of people, or that individuals, we can actually pay for things out of our own pocket instead of having to be dependent on government entities to get these items, which also in turn keeps the prices inflated. Mike Calvo.
I would have to take Jeffrey's side on this one and say basically before I got my iPhone, I had and still have a Nokia N82, which I am quite happy with and does everything that any one of the blind ghetto note takers does, including run external software and everything else. I believe that modularization is extremely important. I'll never forget the $6,000 Braille cell phone that was released a few years ago. Can you imagine taking that to the beach? I mean, here you've got modularization at its very best with a cell phone as the core, and then everything else that you kind of attach via Bluetooth or whatever. And sure, we've got other challenges like batteries and things like that, which we won't get into here. But no, I personally think that the days of the blind ghetto note takers are over with. I mean, come on, a pocket PC that basically you have to fit in a backpack? Hello?
Very good. Question number 5. Do you think Apple should be lobbied to allow the iPhone to use Bluetooth QWERTY keyboards so that persons who cannot master touch screens have the ability to use the devices, or should we let the market work itself out? Ricky.
I actually think that this is not really a blindness-specific question. I think a lot of sighted people would very much appreciate having a Bluetooth keyboard as well. So I don't think that it's really about people who can't master touch screens. I think that having a Bluetooth keyboard makes sense, and it's something that many other smartphones do allow for. I think that Apple certainly should do that as well. And if the iPhone did have the ability to pair with a Bluetooth keyboard, then certainly you would have a note taker replacement, because you do have the kind of ergonomic problem worked out. It's a lot easier to type on a Bluetooth keyboard than it is on a touchscreen. So yeah, I think they should be lobbied by blind and sighted folks a lot alike. It just makes sense.
Very good. William Bullis, your comment, sir.
I agree. They should definitely be lobbied. Most sighted people, though, if you think about it, they're not going to go get a QWERTY keyboard with Bluetooth and connect it that way. What most sighted people will do is go, I don't like the touchscreen, I'm going to the BlackBerry, or I'm going to the Moto Q, or I'm going to a phone that actually has a keypad built onto it. For blind folks, though, I think it's very, very important, because, you know, the touchscreen, yes, maybe you can get it down, you know, you can learn how to do it and things like that. But when you talk about productivity, you want to be able to produce. You want your employer to see you producing. And if that means you quickly connect a little keyboard to it and type out what you need to type out instead of trial and error with the touchscreen, you know, again, that makes you a very more a much more productive person in the working world, you know. And so I definitely think we should petition them.
Okay, Jeffrey Stark, your comment, sir.
I think choice is the name of the game, quite frankly. I think that it's beneficial for the entire disability community to have any kind of alternate input choices. I think the number of just mainstream individuals who have developed repetitive strain injuries and what they call BlackBerry thumb is significant enough to warrant having those options, that having a standard keyboard or other keyboards benefits not just the blind community, but everybody. I mean, that's the case with any feature, is that it benefits, options benefit people in general. That may open the option of having a Bluetooth Braille keyboard too, which has some significant interest to anybody who does Braille typing.
Okay, very good. My thoughts kind of echo a few things that have already been said, that first of all, as far as lobbying Apple or any company, I grew up with children who always had the motto, NHTA, never hurts to ask. So why not ask if this is something that you feel would be an enhancement to the product? I do agree with Bill, though, that I think a lot of people just may not make that adaptation. There certainly are some who will buy accessories, but some that just look at a device and say, no, it doesn't work for me. I'll go find a device that does have this keyboard if that's something really important to me already built into the device, whether it slides out or folds open or whatever ergonomic design that they come up with to accomplish that. So it's all about ergonomics, and I think that is still something that just has not been perfected yet, although we are getting there. Mike Calvo.
Michael, I'd have to disagree with you and Bill there. I've read plenty of blog posts where and listened to plenty of podcasts where folks are asking for Bluetooth keyboards. In fact, there is a Bluetooth keyboard under development. I've pre-ordered it. I'll give you the URL for the notes. But it is in development. All they're waiting for is for Apple to open up the Bluetooth spec for developers. But there are many people out there that want a Bluetooth keyboard and don't want to deal with it BlackBerry style. You've got a BlackBerry style keyboard on the iPhone right now that you can either type with your thumbs or kind of look at it and type with it that way. But I think for example, for a journalist who's just sitting on a plane and needs to work on a document or what have you. So no, I would disagree. I think that there's a definite need for it. I do have a problem with the word lobbying, though. I think that lobbying implies legal or governmental or regulatory. What we want is to let our consumer voices be heard and let the market work itself out. Let them know what you want. If not, go out and open up a company that does it.
Very good point, because I don't know why I chose that particular word when I wrote the question. Maybe to fuel the fire of someone. But anyway, question number 6 has to do with your thoughts on the importance of Braille displays and their support. What provisions, if any, should be asked of mainstream vendors to ensure compatibility with Braille displays? Ricky.
I think that mainstream vendors should allow for example, Bluetooth pairing of Braille displays to a device. They should allow for HID compliant devices, including Braille displays, to be paired with their devices. With that said, I don't think that it should be incumbent on them to write specific drivers for every single display. I think it should be up to display manufacturers to come together around a standard, which would certainly benefit everybody. It would allow these Braille displays to be used on any number of devices rather than restricting the way in which they could be used. And, you know, do you have to get permission from somebody to install this thing on your device or whatever? No. So I think mainstream companies as well as the manufacturers of the devices both have some things that they need to do.
Okay, William, your thoughts, sir?
I agree. Ricky brings up a couple of very good points. You know, just recently, and I'm not going to mention, you know, company names or anything like that, but in the past week, there's been a new Braille display announced with no HID. You can't take that, you know, display and just use it with whatever you want. Yeah, it has Bluetooth and things like that, but you've got to basically get permission from the manufacturer. You have to get drivers from them. You have to get whatever it takes to make that device work with their Braille display. A lot of manufacturers assume that you're going to use their Braille display with their particular, you know, screen reader or device that comes, you know, with it. And the truth of the matter is, I'm a guy who really does like choice. I don't think choice should be taken away from me. And if I'm paying thousands of dollars for a Braille display, I want to be able to use it with whatever I have, whatever I want. And you know, they're not listening in that aspect. The manufacturers aren't. But the question, should mainstream manufacturers put it in? The answer is it's not really them. They don't make the Braille display. They could have drivers on their website, or they could have put it on a CD that comes with the device where you can install your own drivers. You know, not everybody uses a Braille display. 90% of their market isn't going to use one.
Okay. So, Jeffrey Stark, your thoughts, sir?
Well, I think this question should have probably had the word lobby in it, because in my view, it's not the fact that we need Braille display support in devices. I think that would be easy to do if, as both Ricky and Will said, if the industry was actually talking to each other, or at least had standardized on a method of communicating. I mean, there has been very little innovation in the area of Braille displays for 20 years. I mean, we still connect to them in the same way. They still run proprietary drivers. They still pretty much rely on the same kinds of technology as they did 20 years ago. And yet we feed thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars into that area, and yet nothing changes. To me, this is a clear indication of a industry that's not responding to its users' needs.
Okay, and I will tell you my thoughts are, I hope some mainstream companies get involved, and not just Braille displays, but going beyond that. I've had a discussion over 12 years ago with someone and just read recently about a device that might actually emulate, with raised pixels, a 1024 by 768 display. That's almost 1 million pixels. Right now we have a 40-cell Braille display, 8 dots there, 320. That's a little disparaging to me. There's a radical difference. We need a tool that lets us see the screen as our counterparts do. And part of the excitement of the iPhone, just that we see the positioning of things and where they're located in relation to each other. I hope companies can get involved. If it is true that these Braille cells cost $3 a piece, or $120 for 40 physical cells plus the hardware, and yet we're paying $4,400, something's wrong. Now, maybe there's costs I'm not aware of, but something needs to change, and I hope somebody with the resources will come in and innovate in this area. Mr. Calvo.
Man, give that man a soapbox. I would say that, no, I you know, if we have standards, HID and Bluetooth, as Ricky said so eloquently, no, the mainstream company shouldn't have to get into it. And the particular companies that are insisting on people drinking their Kool-Aid, again, as I said before, it's a false monopoly that they're taking advantage of that isn't going to last forever. And the only reason I think that the market is changing, Jeff, is because Finally, you've got thousands of SAMNet subscribers, and you've got thousands of blind people in general on the internet saying, hey, we're tired of this same crap, and we're not going to take this anymore. And that's why you saw the petition for HID and for HID Braille displays that Cerotech spearheaded. And it's making a difference. And there are manufacturers that are listening, except for a choice few. And I think that those will be left by the wayside, as they should be.
Question number 7. How do we effectively educate visually impaired consumers, rehab counselors, and state agencies as to all available access technology options that are available? Ricky.
I think we're doing a bit of that right now with podcasts and having just open forum type discussions with people and sort of opening that up to the community. Anybody can join. The other thing to do is to again, spread by word of mouth, whether it be social networking, whether you're actually sitting in your rehab counselor's office and you ask a question, hey, you're trying to tell me that I need to purchase Zoom text, but I think I'd like to go with speech. Can I check out System Access with magnification? That sort of thing. If we let our voices be heard one person at a time, I think that rehab agencies especially may have a tendency to decide on one brand of screen reader or access technology and stick with it. But if one person asks about something new, they might be able to blow it off. But if two or three people ask about that new thing, then it encourages the people who actually teach others about what's out there to go out and look at it. And the same is true for social networking. You read about something cool that someone else has talked about, and you have the desire to go check that out for yourself. So it's all about, I guess, grassroots approach.
Okay, William, your thoughts, sir.
Well, you know, I happen to feel, and I'm kind of biased, but I happen to feel that I have one of the best trained staffs around. Mainly because when they don't know the answer to something, they don't just say no to the consumer, they consult me. I get phone calls all day and sometimes even at night. But anyway, one of the ways to mandate training of these types of employees is this is where the consumer groups should excel. You know, NFB and ACB should be doing more petitioning of leadership, because that's where training and things come from. A lot of times, a lot of state agencies will say, well, we can't take them out of the field for that length of time so they can know about all this stuff. We have a person doing it, you know. But the truth is, you know, counselors and stuff do need to know. And one of the ways to do it is to petition heads of agencies, like your commissioners or your directors or your whatever it's called in your state. In my state, it's a commissioner. And people, you know, have petitioned my commissioner. I've petitioned my commissioner. And we get our staff allowed to go to all different types of conferences, training sessions, things like that. I do them around the state all the time. And, you know, they're very well attended. So it's all in petitioning the right people who can make the decision to have their employees attend training. After that, it's up to the employee. It's up to the rehab counselor. If you have somebody who's outgoing, who wants to do the right thing, they'll fall in line. There's always going to be that employee who just doesn't care and just is happy getting a paycheck.
Okay, Jeffrey.
Well, I tend to agree, but if we're talking about the AT industry as far as sort of the blind community goes, I think there are enough technical or relatively technical or highly technical blind folk out there who know what they need and know what they want. They just need to communicate that, and it falls back to Ricky and Bill's statement that, you know, it's about education. It's about knowing what your options are, understanding what their impact is, and applying any of that knowledge. So, I mean, I don't really have anything extra to add beyond that.
Okay, very good. Well, I guess my thoughts are, I'm concerned if certain entities know a particular product and they believe that to be the end-all and be-all, and these rehab folks don't take the initiative to research and stay up on the latest technologies. Consumers either don't, or maybe they're shown a piece of technology, and of course it woos them. They haven't seen anything like it before. I'm thinking of the instance when I worked at the Better Business Bureau where I was given the choice of a Pac-Mate or a Braille note. I'm like, well, I guess of those two, it'll be a Pac-Mate, but there certainly were other options that I was not aware of, and either because the window was so short or I didn't take the initiative to see what else might be available. But it's part of the motivation of doing Serotalk, and certainly commend Mike Calvo for allowing that to happen so that we can educate people as much as possible about other options out there. But we need to do our research, and we need to... I don't know what the answer is because I'm not an expert in the rehab industry and have bought most of my technology on my own. But there certainly needs to be some changes and, as someone mentioned earlier, some mandated training of people who oversee these so that they do have some expertise and make sure that we have provisions in place to prevent kickbacks or when purchases go through one or two specific people who have alliances with particular entities, that's not great for serving the clientele as best as possible. Mike Calvo.
It's so nice for people to be polite about things that we know are going on in the industry. Anyway, you know, in South Florida where I grew up, you walk into a Burger King or a McDonald's and you say, I want a Coke. And they say, well, we have Pepsi. And you say, yeah, same old difference. It doesn't matter. Just give me a soft drink. I think that that approach has been taken when it comes to screen readers and many other products. And I think that that needs to change. I heard ACB and NFB mentioned as they need to do this. Listen, folks, ACB and NFB, they have both condemned the fact that and we're just going to come out and say it, that most rehab agencies give you a JAWS instead of a screen reader. There, I said it. And the fact is that we need to get that kind of mentality out of here. And the only way that that's going to happen is we don't need 20% of the people doing 80% of the work. We need 100% of the people to get up and let their own individual consumer voices be heard, lobby, in this case, in a legal sense, because it is illegal for your Voc Rehab agency to refuse to give you what you're asking for. Every state has a consumer or a client access or client advocacy protection group, a CAPS, it's known as in Florida, and we need to take advantage of that. If your Voc Rehab agency refuses to get you a product that you know will suit your needs better than the cookie cutter package that they give people, you need to let them know a couple of times doing that, and we'll make some examples. But let yourself be known. Don't let other people do it for you. Do it for yourself. And that's why Serotalk is here and all the other things, because information is power, people. And every day you wake up, you make a consumer decision.
Very good. Our final formal question here before we allow each of our panelists to comment on anything not addressed. What, I guess I'm brainwashed by the system because I use one of those words here, but what, if anything, can we do to mandate that AT companies innovate, or should we be working toward their extinction? Ricky.
I think we should definitely be working for a change in the current industry infrastructure. And as far as what we do to bring that about, if you wake up one day and you start to use your assistive technology and think, you know, this product has been the same for the past year and a half. It isn't doing anything new for me. You could do one of two things. You could not say anything at all, or you could pick up the phone, you could write an email, you could do whatever you needed to do to contact that company and let them know, hey, you know what? I don't think you guys are working very hard, and to show you that, I don't necessarily, you know, I want to make my voice heard, and I'm hoping for some response. So again, it all comes back to having a consumer voice. We speak not only by offering our opinions, but we speak through our wallets as well. If there's a particular company who's just not doing it for you, you aren't stuck buying their product. There is choice, and I think we need to exercise our right to make those types of choices. And by doing that, the companies are going to recognize the fact that, wow, we suddenly don't have as many customers. Maybe we need to wake up and start innovating.
Very good. William.
I don't think we should be working towards extinction of any company. I think competition will make everything work in our favor. It always has in the past. You know, I mean, look at how frightened, and I don't know if I'm allowed to even, you know, whatever, edit it out if I'm not, but look at how frightened certain companies got when Serotek decided to come out and say, hey, you know, this is what we're showing now, this is what we're selling, you know, it's going to be the way of the future. And if anybody doesn't believe that it's the way of the future, they don't know what they're talking about, because Serotek has turned it up a notch on a lot of these companies. I'm not just saying that because I'm in a Serotek chat room. I'm saying that because, you know, look at the statistics. Look at how many people are now subscribing. Look at how many, you know, companies get scared when stuff like that happens, you know. But it does, in addition to getting scared, it does make them push harder to put out a much, much better product. So, and then it pushes Serotek to put out a much better product. So back and forth, it'll go. And, you know, the consumer will be the one that makes the choice. So,
okay, Jeffrey.
We're sounding a lot the same, I think, in this particular piece, but it's an indication that there's a need for a change. I mean, that's what it boils down to in my mind, that we all recognize, we've all been in the industry long enough, we all see that this change is necessary. There is stagnation. Does that mean that we have to get rid of the AT vendors? Sure. No, not at all. Leave them around. And what it means is that we should be advocating for the identification of existing barriers and the elimination of those barriers. And in my view, the biggest barrier we face as blind consumers is that our needs are not being addressed by the general public or by mainstream products, or they have not been addressed sufficiently in most cases. So before we deal with AT, we need to really focus on the mainstream. And the AT will fill in the gaps. So whether that AT has today's shape or tomorrow's shape doesn't really matter. In my view, we have a voice. We should be using it. And not enough people do.
I think that's the key point. Not enough people are exercising their rights to speak up for what they want and what they need. And I don't know if mandate was the right word to use, but the point is that a company should be bidding directly for our business instead of going through these large entities. No different than when you go out and buy a computer. You contact a company, and maybe many people don't know this. You say, here's what I want. Here's the specifics I want in my hardware and software. Give me your best price. And you're one of five companies. No different than contractors do, whether it's building a bridge or a road or anything else. And we as consumers need to get to that level. At least anyway, with AT companies, it's certainly different when we're in the mainstream and we're paying what everyone else is. But when we're paying 3 to 30 times what someone else is for a product that in many cases is substandard, then yes, something has to change. And I certainly don't have the answers, but we as individuals need to be more involved in that process of bidding, the innovation, and the ability to say, no, this product's unacceptable. I don't care how much money you've spent to develop it. It's crap. And we're not going to purchase it and go back to the drawing board. Mr. Calvo.
Well, you know, I live for the day of the extinction of the AT industry as a whole. I believe that one day there will be universal design principles built into all products, because I think that ultimately we are a testing ground to show the validity of certain features in products. I think that we've done that at Serotek. I think that Apple has heard and others have heard, and now they're putting them into the mainstream, and folks that may consider these features to be a luxury are loving it. I live for the day that Serotek has no more customers in the AT industry, but consumers that just so happen to be blind or happen to have a type of impairment that we facilitate their using our technology. I really want to see the AT industry die, very much because, back to the same analogy that I started my talk with this evening, growing up in Miami, my parents came here as immigrants, and they were given a small area to build their community. Ultimately, now, if you go to South Florida, if you don't speak Spanish, then you're not going to get a job. Now, leaving illegal immigration and all of that out of this discussion, the point that I'm making is that we've come out of the ghetto. We've come into the mainstream in South Florida. We've come in out of the barrio and into where everybody, you have a business, and if you want to be able to sell to the next Spanish person that walks in the door, you better be able to speak the language. I think that it needs to happen the same thing in the mainstream. We need to educate them on universal design and insist that that be done. And as my partner so eloquently stated a moment ago, vote with your wallet, people. You've got a real loud voice in those greenbacks. And that's all I got to say about that.
Okay, very good. That's into the formal 8 questions. We'll take one round to see if anyone has any final comments, anything they wish to address that was not addressed or covered in these 8 questions. And I'll start with you, Ricky. No? Okay, well, I did kind of throw that one in there for a loop, so
sorry. Sorry about that.
Okay, there you go.
The only thing I have to add was I wanted to go back to the replacement of the note takers by smartphones, and I just wanted to add to what Mike said regarding the Bluetooth keyboards. Again, I don't think that that is so much a blind-sided thing. It's more like you can text and you can write short notes on a smartphone, but if you're working on a 5-page document, nobody, regardless of what type of abilities they have, is going to want to type on a tiny little smartphone. So again, I don't think the Bluetooth question is a blind or sighted issue. And the reason that I point that out is a lot of people want it. So the more the merrier, basically.
Okay, William.
Well, yeah, I just wanted to go back to some of the cookie cutter stuff that's being done as far as recommendations on equipment. I agree, there's way too much of that going on. And you know, I still say, you know, the consumer groups are very organized to an extent, and a lot of that needs to come from them. Otherwise, you know, there's got to be other groups, other you know, consumers. A lot of times when they come to our agency, don't know the technology that's out there. And I just found out yesterday, I met with a family who had gone to school for the blind. The girl had gone to school for the blind, just graduated. She's about to start college. And the family had no clue of technology that was out there. And I showed them all sorts of different things that they had never seen before. They were going to subscribe to some kind of weird service that their daughter could call in and listen to her email over the phone with a phone that they had purchased for her that could have, you know, we could have put a screen reader on there. And they didn't even know that. And no one that had done this kid's evaluation let them know about any of that stuff. So it is our responsibility as professionals to let people know every option that they have, not just the ones that we're comfortable training. And Mike Calvo said it best, you know, there's a lot of state agencies out there, and I've worked for many of them. I've been a consumer of one. You know, there are a lot of, yeah, give me JAWS or give me the most popular. And that's exactly what they do, because that's what they're comfortable training. Once the product is purchased for the consumer, it comes in, and that's exactly what they're comfortable doing. There is no real choice, and that really does bother me as a professional, because my goal is to give everybody every option, not just the most popular ones.
Okay, Jeffrey, your thoughts, sir?
Well, just to quickly comment on Bill's option, I think that's definitely a reality in the industry. But whenever large organizations go out to contract, it's not unusual for you to see something like, I want to purchase 100 copies of a Zoom text. Not Zoom text, a Zoom text. And 100 copies of a JAWS. And yeah, we can talk about Kleenex and being a brand, but at the end of the day, we need to ensure that people are given the options. But for me, what I wanted to just highlight was, in my view, I think we're right at the cusp of a really interesting time. I feel I can feel the amount of change that's brewing right now. I think especially in the mobile market, we're seeing a lot of change. You know, it started with things like Nokia having a built-in voice dialing and screen reading for basic functions on the phone, and I think it's been the successor to that is the iPhone having it built in with a full screen reader, and I think many other manufacturers are taking note. I mean, Android's another one on the horizon that'll probably make a big splash. It means consumers will have likely at least 2 or more options at their disposal, and that's never a bad thing.
Indeed.
That's it for me.
Okay, my thoughts are that this, more than any time in the past, or so it seems, maybe it's just my heightened awareness, this is the time to advocate for what you want. When I started full-time with Cerotech back in November, one thing Mike Calvoy said to me is every day the thing that should excite you the most is that you have the ability to make change. And when he first threw out the idea of eliminating AT, of having standards and having products work off the shelf, that you know, what for us is a necessity is a convenience, and most sighted folks would like those tools as well. But this is the time. I'm excited when I read this VI phone list that people are contacting Apple directly and letting them know of problems or asking questions or making suggestions for future enhancements. That's what people need to do instead of just complaining about it. Contact the companies and say, hey, this is not working for me. Am I doing something wrong? Or maybe this is something you should look at to improve your product. And if you see some real injustice, start a petition. They work. Take some time. Make sure you get it worded correctly and free of spelling or typographical errors. And read a little bit about how to market it and get the word out. And you can find hundreds or thousands of people who share your view. Then you have something to take to a company. Not just your personal beef, but that hundreds or thousands share your view. And there is strength in numbers. Mike.
You know, everybody here has said it really well. The one thing that I'd like to also drop in here is the fact that, hey, there's a great guy that said his name slips my mind now, but he was a public speaker, and he said, you know, if you look at a product and you say, or a need and say something, somebody should do something about this, and you don't get up and do it yourself. Thanks. Jim Stovall is the guy's name. Matt just told me. If you don't get out and do something about it, you probably just missed a calling on your life. Don't underestimate your own ability, folks, to get out there and make a company and make it work. I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth. I'm the parent. My parents are blue-collar folks. I started this company with a dream, and what we've done over the last 8 years is just agitate for change. And that's all capitalism is all about, is agitating for change, making a difference in a market, realizing a need, and fulfilling that market better than anybody else. And everybody within the sound of my voice has that ability. You have the tool that you're listening to my voice through to be able to accomplish that. Behind this keyboard, you're an equal. You're capable of reaching out to a community of millions of consumers. There are dozens of blind consumers in this room tonight. I looked at some of the names here. There are movers in this industry that are here. And it's great because I know who you are, and I know that you're going to take this tech talk and you're going to pass it around, and it's going to make a difference. Spread it out. Scream it from the rooftops. Accessibility is a right, and we have the right to express ourselves and to let our consumer voices be heard. And let me tell you, it was the great thing my partner said over here is vote with your wallet. That's all there is to say, is vote with your wallet. Thanks for coming out, folks.
That ends the formal discussion here. And certainly if you have some thoughts, you can send those to resources@cerotalk.com or call the Blab line. And we certainly be glad to use your comments in future podcasts and tech chats. Toll free in the U.S. and Canada, 866-997-BLAB. Of course, BLAB translates to 2522. It's very important. I quite honestly hope for greater input, even from the users and listeners of this program. But some people just want to be spoon-fed and entertained. And I hope people will get involved at a greater level and tell us what you want. Tell us what issues we need to be addressing or items you feel that need to be brought to the forefront for attention and investigation. We certainly welcome that kind of input. That's what we hoped and continue to strive for with the Cerotalk project. So with that, we invite you to join us next week. I can't guarantee it, but my hope is to certainly do a more specific iPhone discussion and get some people who are using the product and maybe answer some questions. We had the Cerotalk podcast where Ricky gave a demo of it. There are two other podcasts and more materials coming out all the time. It's just as a new device, certainly taking time for people to realize its capabilities and experiment. And we're very excited about it. It goes way beyond the device itself. It's a tool for a future of change and inclusion, the big I word. So with that, until we meet again next week, let's stay connected and stay directed.